Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Short week, condensing everything. Sal Capaccio joining us today as we, joins us most days. But the game's tomorrow, Bills and Dolphins. And Thursday Night Football Week 2, big matchup. He joins us on the Western Hotline. Good morning, Sal.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good, good. I mean, I was commenting earlier that, you know, the shortened week, something about it, not just a shortened week, but having it be Week 2, it is fast and furious for game number 2 here.
For sure. And if you look at the Thursday night schedule for the year, you'll notice something interesting this year. It's mostly division games. Now, I know they've had division games in the past on Thursday Night Football. I think this is way more heavy on division games than your normal Thursday Night Football schedule. I think the league has made a concentrated effort here to go to division games because they want teams that are a little more familiar with each other for better football purposes. Obviously, that's the case here, the Bills and the Dolphins. But it's a long, to me, way, getting around to saying that even though it's very quick and very early in the season, at least you have an opponent you're very familiar with. Preparation, you know, obviously it still have to be a quick turnaround, but you kind of understand going in what the game plan is going to be, their personnel, your personnel. There's a lot of familiarity there.
Yeah. And this matchup, you know, it's of course key in the division, but league attention here. Miami's got their narrative that they don't beat good teams, and the Bills, it feels like, Sal, if the Bills win this game, which they very well could do, that it'll feel like, you know, all right, back on track. Any sort of doubt about this team? They're 2-0. They're ahead of Miami again. Like, what else is new?
Yeah, I agree with that. I was thinking about, like, what's the storyline coming out nationally if the Bills win? Might even be what you just said. Might be more about the Dolphins. And, well, here they go again. Dolphins are the Dolphins, right? And they just can't beat the Bills. And, they're just Josh Allen owns them. If the Bills win, though, I do think that there's a, hey, suddenly the Bills are 2-0. Look at this team, the team that people thought would take a step back, and now they get 11 days to prep for a Jacksonville Jaguars team come to their house on a Monday night. Good look at 3-0, maybe. Like, suddenly it starts to change. Look at what the Jets did the other night. They did not look good. Like, I think if the Bills go down to Miami and then win this game, like, we're coming out of the weekend with people going, oh, well, I guess the Bills division again, despite all the changes. Now, it doesn't have to be reality. Maybe in a few weeks, everything changes and flips. I don't think people are really taking the Patriots that seriously right now to contend for the division after a win. If the Bills lose, then I do wonder if there's a, well, we told you, you know, all these changes with the Bills, or if it's more about, okay, division game, Miami, this tough week on the Bills. So it'll be interesting. I almost feel like nationally, storyline-wise, that the Dolphins almost have more to lose in that regard than the Bills do. Like, if the Bills go down to Miami, lose a Week 2 game, and, you know, Josh Allen banged up, I don't know if there's going to be people throwing dirt on him right away. Sure, there will be some.
Yeah.
But I do think that is the case for Miami, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah. Miami's in a good spot. I'm, like, looking ahead because the Bills and Dolphins, it's different than the Jets and the Patriots. Like, looking at divisional matchups for Miami, they'll play the Bills this week, and then again in November. And in between these two games, here's Miami's schedule. We know the Bills is tough, right? We know the Bills have Jacksonville, Baltimore, Houston. Miami has Seattle, Tennessee, New England, Indy, and Arizona in between these two Bills matchups. So, you know, regardless of what happens in this game, by the time we get to the next game between these two teams, we'll have obviously a lot more of the season in context. Sal, with regard to injuries, the story on Taron Johnson seems to be, Sean McDermott said, they're evaluating their options. And, of course, what that means is we're all trying to dig into what that might mean. So, any guess? And what's, like, the full spectrum of what that might mean? I think the easiest landing spot is that he will miss some time.
For sure. I mean, we know he's going to miss tomorrow night, for sure. Like, that's already been determined. I think the issue the team will have here is, first you have to determine how long the injury would would basically keep him out on a normal time frame. And if that is 4 weeks, four games, you're going to have to probably put him on injured reserve. If they're confident that he can come back before four games, then you don't put him on injured reserve. But what happens there is now you have to determine what do you do with the roster spot. If you don't put him on IR, you have to carry him for whatever games he's going to miss. So that's a roster spot you're eating up. That's the delicate balance you always have. If it's a 3 to 4 week injury, that's the, what do you do? Do you put him on IR? Do you stash him for three straight games and just carry him on the roster? What if he doesn't come back after four? Then you kind of should have done it anyway, right? That's kind of what they're balancing through here. You also probably think, what if it's, you know, I would say this. Your clue is going to be before tomorrow night. So the way it works is, you know, you guys know that when the team plays on Sundays, Sunday afternoons, that on 4 o'clock on Saturday is when they have to make all their roster moves, right? They'll have an IR and evaluations. What happens on night games during the week is you have up until before the game, the 90 minutes before the game. They could announce anything when they announce their inactives. So just because we don't hear anything on Taron Johnson today or tomorrow afternoon doesn't really mean anything. Maybe tomorrow night, all of a sudden, before the game, you hear he's been placed on IR. If you don't hear that, that means they're confident he's coming back within the next four games.
Okay.
If you do hear that, okay, that means he's out for four games. Obviously, he has to, and they had to make some adjustments on the roster. So there's a balance to walk here. It's all going to start with what the determination is on what his injury should keep him out for.
Thinking about how they will overcome this, I mean, a name that used to be in the mix here is Saran Neal, right, who's with Miami now. He and Jordan Poyer are both with Miami. So how much do the Bills have to change their defense, if at all, given that Taron Johnson is, I mean, he's a cornerstone, not just in his ability, but in the actual role that he plays that makes him part of their base defense. Like, missing Taron Johnson is missing a very, very key cog. What can they do to help in his absence?
Well, I would just point to Sunday. I don't think they changed the defense at all. All they did was move some parts around because Cam Lewis is a really good backup. Cam Lewis, as I've said many times, could start on a lot of teams in this league at nickel corner. They're very confident in him. I think the bigger change comes in the ripple effect after that, which is when you go to sub packages, you had to go from Cam Lewis to Jamarcus Ingram, who that's not his role. It's not what he normally does. He had to do that on Sunday. My guess is here, do we see, or my assumption or guess, I don't know how you want to phrase it here, I wonder, do we see Cole Bishop make his NFL debut this week? Because to me, the way to do this would probably be, if everyone's healthy, guys, if everyone's healthy, it makes the most sense of Cam Lewis becomes your nickel corner, Cole Bishop becomes your dime safety. And then what do you do with Mike Edwards? Is he healthy enough to play over DeMar Hamlin? Are you still starting DeMar Hamlin? I'm not really sure. Or maybe Mike Edwards becomes your dime safety. You could do that too. If they're both healthy enough to play and put out there and you're confident, one of those guys could do it. You would have Bishop, Edwards, and Hamlin, and one would start next to Taylor Rapp. The other could become your dime safety. I think that's the easiest switch. Now, what happens if you do put Cole Bishop on? Is he comfortable enough in that role to do some of the things that you would normally be able to do with everybody fully healthy? Then you get to, I would agree that you're probably not going to do some of the things with Cam Lewis you would do with Taron Johnson. Taron Johnson's a good blitzer. Not that Cam can't do it. He's done it. But I don't know if you're going to lean into that as much as you might in a normal game. Like, this is the kind of game where if you go back the last few years, the timing of the Dolphins' offense is very much disrupted by some of those surprise blitzes from the edge, corners, things like that. And Taron's done that a few times. Like, is that something you're going to trust and want Cam Lewis to do? I think that's where the, you know, how do we balance this comes into play.
What about Dwayne Smoot already being ruled out also, Sal? Because he's not a guy we spend a lot of time talking about for his importance on the team. But I mentioned to you earlier in the week, like, Rousseau played a higher snap count than like almost any defensive end in a game we've seen on Sunday. And I had forgotten when mentioning that like a part of that could have been that they were planning on Smoot playing snaps, and here they don't have him at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I agree with that, Joe. I think the bad news and good news, right? Bad news is Smoot is very important to what they do. They really, I think, plan on having him inside, outside, do that key role that you can kind of put him everywhere down the line. And, you know, he's going to have a nice role here in this defense this year. The good news here is, compared to last week, you already know it. Last week, That injury didn't pop up until Friday. Like, we didn't find out until Sean McDermott came on the Extra Point Show with me on Friday and said, Dewan Smoot has an injury, and he's his toe injury, and he's not going to practice, and we'll see about the game. So that means he had gone through the week with them preparing for him to play. That was another adjustment on defense they have to make for their game plan pretty much right before the game. You know, they don't have to do that as much this week. If they know that Dewan Smoot's not going to play tomorrow night, which it looks like that's the case, now you can decide what you want to do. Does that mean another elevation for Cameron Klein? Does that mean Kingsley Jonathan comes up? Is that more time for Casey Tuhill to kind of get in? Okay, we're going to put you in the game plan a little bit more. So I do think, Joe, it hurts what they want to do. I at least think they have a heads up here much more than they did last week, and we'll see how they want to play it.
What about for the Dolphins? So the two running backs, and we'll see if they end up playing without practicing this week, Sal, but Achan, he had good numbers against the Bills last year. He didn't play a lot otherwise, but against the Bills, he was pretty good, and Mostert with the speed. So, I don't know, like it does feel like the Dolphins' offense does take a little bit of a hit, but then again, it's running back, and we also just saw on Monday that sometimes you can just plug a guy in and it works.
Right, and this is such a tough one. We're all just going to have to wait until tomorrow because, I guess today, my guess is maybe they list him as questionable, both Achan and Raheem Mostert. They could declare him out today, though. They could say, yeah, they're not playing. And, you know, if this was a normal week and they had missed both Wednesday and Thursday, I'd be like, okay, like it's really trending towards, like, I haven't practiced. But this is such a short week and they're going to err on the side of caution. So I wouldn't be surprised if either or both of them play. Yes, Achan is, he has good numbers against the Bills. His speed has hurt the Bills in the past, some of the things they've done. But, you know, his numbers weren't that great last week, right? The Dolphins didn't run the ball terrific last week, if I remember right. I have to go back and look at their numbers against Jacksonville. Now, look, behind them is Jeff Wilson. Jeff Wilson's had some nice numbers in this league. He's not Achan. He's a decent running back. So you're right, Joe, like, they could put a guy in. Just because they don't have these guys doesn't mean the guy that's going to play for them isn't capable. He's capable. He's done some nice things in this league. So, yeah, I don't know where this goes. It's going to be really interesting because even though they haven't practiced, they had a non-practice and a walkthrough. So I don't know, you know, where that stands with them. But 2 days of missed practices, you know, then you start – if you're a Dolphins fan, you're like, okay, that's a little worrisome.
To Josh Allen's left hand, non-throwing hand, a long way from the right hand, people were zooming in on the glove, Sal. It was almost like a Star Wars Darth Vader, Luke Skywalker tribute. Yeah. He's got this glove on. What does Allen say about the actual injury, what it is? Is he playing with that glove on? Is he practicing with it on? What do we got from the quarterback?
Well, he won't tell you. They won't say. They don't have to describe exactly what the injury is. It has to be listed as left hand on the injury report. By the way, just for knowledge for everybody, when a player in the NFL is injured on the injury report, they can put ankle, they can put arm or hand. Mm-hmm. When it's a quarterback, they have to describe the left or the right. When it's a punter or kicker, they have to describe the left or the right if it's his leg or foot or something like that. So obviously for Josh, that's why you'll see left hand on the injury report. If it was just a wide receiver, they might just say hand. Does that make sense, right? You know what mm-hmm. I mean? So, you know, just so everybody knows. But they do not have to. This is also part of it. They don't have to disclose, oh, he has this exact thing wrong with him. Say it's a hand injury. That's what it is. He said that he had no limitations whatsoever at practice. That's reflected in the injury report. He's a full participant. Sean McDermott said that when we met with him yesterday, he said at the walkthrough the day before, you know, he felt Josh did everything he could do. So it's a walkthrough, but it feels like to me, guys, that nobody's really concerned about Josh not being able to do everything he normally can't do. It is his left hand. He's obviously a right-handed quarterback. The only thing that creeps up for me, and I'm sure the team has this in the back of their heads, is ball security. When he goes to hand off by turning to his right with his left hand, when he takes a center snap, when he takes a shotgun snap. You know, those are the things I think that creep in. I don't think the injury itself, I don't think has anything to do with once the play starts, really kind of what he's able to do as Josh Allen. I just think like ball security just comes into play where you have to be a little bit more careful in this situation.
Yeah, you know, ball security. I'm thinking, Sal, I mean, when we're talking Josh Allen, we're talking unusual plays like
Right.
Could he jump over Buda Baker with it, you know, afraid to land on it? You know, it's carrying the football, ball.
He'd probably put it in his right hand again to stretch it out, right? I mean, right. That's what he would do. Right, I mean, that's what Josh does. Yeah.
Right, right. I mean, you know, one thing he has sometimes done is put the ball on the ground. He did it in the opener. And I wonder if scrambling, he might be, again, we're always having this conversation, so I apologize for bringing it up. But now he's got something that is actually potentially limiting his ability to protect the ball, where he might say, I've got to be aware of this more than I would be if I feel 100% in every way.
Yeah, you know, so if he's out there scrambling and all of a sudden he's looking, he's like, I'm going to gain, you know, 5 yards here, get a first down. I mean, is he thinking in that moment about, I better protect the left side here, the hand, how he does it? I'm not sure. He might. He probably should. Or is he just like, I'm getting this damn first down, right? I mean, like, that's what that's the way Josh Allen plays. So I do wonder about that. You know, hey, but he's got the glove on, and, you know, they've done what they can, and they're going to do what they have to do to keep that ball security as best as possible, to keep him safe as much as possible. So, you know, hopefully it doesn't come into play whatsoever. But I do wonder, when he's out there, how much is he thinking about how he has to specifically kind of carry the ball and the things that he has to do during the play.
Did he, I'm going to miss this, by the way, did he say if he's wearing the glove in the game or not?
No, he did not, Joe. Okay. Good question. I don't know. If he's practicing with it now, I wouldn't be surprised, but you never know. It might just be for precautionary measures now, and, you know, we get to the game on Thursday night and he doesn't have it.
All right.
Well, you know what? I think it looks kind of cool. I think you should wear it.
The aesthetic is good.
It kind of looks cool.
Yeah.
It's very good.
Throw an arm sleeve on top of that,
especially
too.
If they're wearing the Stormtrooper uniforms. Don't wear that glove.
I think.
Ooh. Well, you know what? They are wearing white, I believe,
because the Dolphins are wearing their throwback.
Offense, and the yesterday practice, the Bills had the offense had white jerseys on.
Okay.
Okay, right. And the Dolphins are wearing the throwbacks,
yes,
as you said.
Throwback teal.
Okay. That by the way, like, again, like, back to the matchup, Sal, for Thursday night. Isn't that a trend this way? Like, isn't Amazon...
Wait a minute. I think got that wrong. I think the Bills are the Bills wearing blue? No, they are wearing white.
I think
I had to go back to practice yesterday and look. I forgot. Well, I have practice pictures, and I have to look again. What was happening yesterday? Hold on. I'm going to do this right now.
The Bills are wearing... No matter what, they're wearing some white.
James Cook has his white jersey on, okay, which means the Bills are wearing white. The offense, traditionally under Sean McDermott, the offense wears the color in practice of the jersey color they're wearing in the game.
Well, yeah, it's a night game where the sun is not there working for Miami to hammer the other team, so they're going to wear their color as opposed to wearing their white. Seriously, like that might be a
part of
why they're wearing their throwbacks. All right, so we'll see if Allen wears that. The rest of the offense, Sal, you know, it was a committee offense in week one. What did Joe Brady, what do the offensive players, the people involved, have to say about their first performance?
You know, I think operationally they all felt it went pretty well getting the plays in. Out there was really that one hiccup, you know, where they had the take a timeout, you know, late in the count, I think it was. I think they really want to clean up the false starts, obviously, guys. Like, that can't happen at home. And now you're going on the road. Like, those are the little things they really want to clean up. As far as, like, playing, the numbers, Josh was asked specifically yesterday, like, did Arizona do some things to take away Dalton Kincaid? He's like, oh, yeah, he did. Like, a lot of times there were, like, three guys on him, as you guys saw some of those viral videos, right? You know, so... And he said, if three guys are going to cover him, then there's somebody open. It's my job to find the open guy. And, you know, Mac Hollins, you know, asked about, you know, just the number of guys that are catching passes. And he's like, well, this is what it is. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, that's what they're going to say. And I believe him, of course, always, because, you know, with this, because it's not about one guy getting a lot of targets. It's about finding the open receiver. I think they think that they felt it went really well. Josh said there was only one miscommunication between him and Connor McGovern, and obviously that was like kind of blitz pickup. He said, but James Cook bailed him out with a nice third down catch, so I don't know which one that was. Maybe that was Josh scrambling to the right when he hit James. I'm not sure. But he said there was like one miscommunication between him and Connor. Otherwise, everything went well as far as blitz pickups. I thought the snaps went pretty well. So I think operationally, everything went pretty well. You know, Bobby Babich had to adjust on the fly. But Bobby Babich has been doing this a long time. And I remember when Matt Milano got hurt, and the day that, you know, we saw Bobby Babich in Pittsburgh, and it was announced that Milano was going to be out, and Bobby Babich, of course, he's, you know, he would love to have Matt Milano, but he just looked out. He goes, guys, It's the NFL. You remember how many times, like, during camp we'd lose Poyer or Hyde, or, you know, you got to go. That's what you do. Like, you move on. And I really – that Bobby Babich, if there's anybody suited to deal with, like, an injury popping up on the first play of the game to a starter, I don't think Bobby Babich gets fazed. He's been doing this long enough. He's been in this game long enough where he knows you have to be prepared for that.
All right. Thank you, Sal.
All right, guys. Have a good one.
Sal Capaccio, the team, of course, traveling to Miami to play the Dolphins. Have a couple stats for you on Miami and one on Arizona. I'm going to mix it in. So a lot of ways these teams are different. Mm-hmm. We know that. Speed is a big part of this. I found a couple different things on speeds that ball carriers and people traveled, wide receivers especially. Marvin Harrison did not do much in this game against the Bills in the opener.
Right.
And, you know, next-gen stats allows you to track the speed, how fast guys run. Of the rookie receivers and the speed that they hit, mm-hmm. Harrison's never been thought to be a burner. He had the lowest, like, of the rookie receivers.
Okay.
Lower than Coleman.
Yeah.
Coleman did not hit a very high top speed. Harrison was below him. Mm-hmm. Neighbors, all the Worthy was at 20 miles per hour.
Adonai Mitchell, maybe.
A.D. Mitchell was number one.
Oh, was he?
Fastest rookie receiver in week one was A.D. Mitchell. Then Xavier Worthy. Then maybe Brian Thomas Jr. down the board. And then Coleman comes in above Marvin Harrison Jr. And Marvin Harrison Jr.'s top speed traveled in the Bills game was 16 miles per hour. Miami. Both Waddle and Hill hit 20 in their game.
Yep.
The difference is a difference.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, Marvin Harrison Jr., the kind of routes they had to run, the offensive coordinator in Arizona is already saying, we're going to make a point to get him involved more, which, you know, that is something that will happen quite a bit. He's a high draft pick. He's supposed to be great. But what a difference for Arizona, where what's the speed threat? It's Greg Dortch. It's not much. It's Kyler and it's Greg Dortch.
It's not really.
And in Miami, if Achan plays, he's another one. Speedster. Yep. And both Hill and Waddle. By the way, there are two teams now that have two freakishly fast receivers. Do you know who the other one is?
That have two?
Mm-hmm. So Miami hit top speed. Both those guys hit top speeds for week one.
Is it? No. Detroit has Jameson Williams, but who would the other guy be? It's not them. Is it going to be the...
Actually, there's three teams.
The Packers? Jayden Reed and maybe like Christian Watson?
It is not.
Okay. What about the Seahawks?
It's the Colts.
Oh, because of A.D. Mitchell.
A.D. Mitchell and Alec Pierce.
Who was just running. I think I saw his route chart on Sunday, Alec Pierce, and he caught like three catches for like 150 yards.
Yeah.
And he just ran straight. He just ran. I don't think he ran another route. He just ran straight ahead the whole
just
day.
Just straight speed. Here are the names on the receiver board. And Indy might have three. Anthony Gould also hit 21. So here's Indy with three guys that hit 20 plus. Nico Collins was the fastest ball carrier of the week.
Nice.
21 miles per hour. Tank Dell found his way to the top 20. So both of those guys. Yeah, big challenge this week for the Bills. Rashid Shaheed hit 20 miles an hour three times with the ball in his hands.
Yep.
You got to love next-gen stats, you know? It's fun stuff.
They got I'm diving in right now on these two. Average separation score, you know who was number one in the league this past week? Average separation score. So this is on all your routes, not just targets. Number five, Nico Collins. Number four, George Pickens. Number three, Jameson Williams. Number two, Mike Evans. All pretty good receivers, right?
Yeah.
Number one in the league this past week was A.D. Mitchell. He was more open than any other player in the league. You said there were like plays that they missed him on, right?
Oh, yeah. Richardson missed him three times.
Okay.
What could have been 150 yards and three touchdowns. Now, maybe Houston's defense is terrible. That's a part of it, of course. Joe Marino, when we get back, of the Locked On Bills podcast. Joe said something that I said the same thing, basically, on Sunday. He just said it in a much more delicate way. We'll talk about the balance for the Bills going forward. And the Bills-Dolphins matchup, of course. Jeremy and Joe on
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? an easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the Snacktime MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
UGR.
He knows a lot about this offense and a lot about me, so taking that into account, bringing a guy like Calais Campbell, again, veteran leadership, guys that are in the right spot doing the right things, and new D coordinator, so they're doing a little bit of things differently over there, the type of scheme that they're running, and they got some playmakers over there. Holland's playing some really good football, had a really big play last week. We all know Jalen Ramsey got paid. Again, they got some guys over there that we got to focus on and worry about, but at the same time, it's a short week, got to focus on what we do best.
Bills quarterback Josh Allen on the matchup with the Dolphins.
I just realized, well, this might be good for Allen's hand. We're not going to get fight night this year between Allen and Christian Wilkins.
Christian Wilkins, yeah.
He's gone.
True. Jeremy and Joe welcoming in Joe Marino of the Locked On Bills podcast for our weekly conversation about the upcoming game, dipping into the last game as well. And Joe, I appreciated very much what you wrote yesterday, a much more delicate way to say it than maybe sometimes how I do it, where I watch the Bills Cardinals and I just yell, they're running it too much! And you said, I'm looking for a lot more variety on first down moving forward. I appreciated how that probably landed a lot more constructively with Bills Mafia.
Well, good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on. Definitely, if there was something that frustrated me about the Bills' offensive performance against Arizona, it was the first down run rate. 75% running the ball on first down, and that went to 76.5% in the second half. And the success rate, the yards per carry, just went down and down and down as the game moved along. And so I thought the Bills kind of made it harder than they had to in the second half. And I know, look, they scored 24 points, won the game. I get it. I hear all that. But how often did Josh Allen and the offense have to overcome being in second and 10, like just over and over, because those first down runs were stuffed in the second half? And when you look at Josh Allen only having a play action rate of like 16% in the game, you're thinking, man, that would have been a great opportunity to work in two or three extra play action passes, because Arizona just started shooting those gaps and making plays against the run. And I feel like there's some meat on the bone, and maybe it could have been a little easier of a path to score those 24 points and win the game.
I made a little bit of a guess at some game theory on this, Joe. Like, if you are a team that's trying to establish this new identity under Joe Marino, or sorry, not Joe Marino, that's you, under Joe Brady. We got a lot of Joes here. Under Joe Brady, one of the things you might want to do is over time really show you are committed to something and really build something in the run game. So, you know, they did it against Arizona. This week will be a different opponent in Miami. So maybe they don't stick to it nearly as much because the matchup is different. But when it comes to the performance of the run game overall, you think it was just predictability, the line you're happy with, the backs you're relatively happy with?
Yeah, I thought the run blocking was very good. It just came to a situation where, I mean, literally Arizona started shooting gaps. And they, you know, the Bills ran a little bit more zone than I thought they would. And, you know, zone running is, you know, your running backs tasked with finding a crease and getting downhill. Well, the same thing's true for the linebackers. They want to find the crease and shoot the gap. And I thought Arizona really got ahead of that flow and was able to do that. I think you could definitely make a case for less James Cook in the second half. You know, I think James Cook's a good player, but being physical and grinding out tough yards, not really his forte. And you have more physical backs in Ty Johnson and Ray Davis. I think leaning into them more in the second half, if you're going to really try to be that type of team, and, you know, late in games and close things out, I think you might want to lean into those skill sets and kind of sprinkle in James Cook as the change of pace. So I feel like maybe mixing in those backs, maybe in addition to some more play action looks in the second half, would have been more effective.
How do you feel about the league kind of doing it in general? Like, the Bills were not alone in running the ball a lot. Maybe the first down mark would have been one of the highest in the league. But do you kind of have a reaction to the whole league kind of saying, at least in week one, like the pass rate's just not going to be as high as it was a few years ago?
Yeah, I feel like I've been trying to warn about this over the last year or so, and it's definitely coming to fruition. What is it, the like lowest passing yards per game in a week of a season since 2007 or something like that, something crazy. And so this is the natural shift in how you kind of figured the league was going to go. The passing game's really opened up, and you're seeing all these spread offenses, and of course defenses have to catch up to that. They start playing more smaller packages, extra defensive backs, and well, the offense's counter is cyclical, right? They're going to run the ball and play with bigger people, and you don't have the defensive personnel to match that. And so I think you're seeing that happen due to the structure of how teams are playing, but then also you got some bad quarterbacks out there. Yeah. I mean, there's some really terrible quarterback play in week one, and so I think maybe that's out of necessity as well.
Joe Marino of the Locked On Bills podcast joining us here on the Wester Hotline. One thing about that theory, Joe, is that week one is like week four of the preseason. There's a lot of sloppy play. The Bills are guilty of this. In the first half, they fall down by 14 points. The Dolphins did the same. They fall down by 14 points, make a play, turn it around. And that the Dolphins-Jags game, the opener, watching that, to me, it looked the kind of the same story. A sloppy team, two sloppy teams, really. And Miami maybe fortunate to get out with the win, but by the time that game got on to the end of it, they started to look like the dangerous offense that they can be.
Yeah, I mean, that game flipped late in the third quarter. I mean, the Jaguars are going to score, literally going to run in and score a touchdown there late in the third quarter to put them ahead 24-7. But instead, Javon Holland forces that fumble. The Dolphins recover, and the next play is an 80-yard bomb to Tyreek Hill, and Dolphins score 13 unanswered points the rest of the way to close out the win. And, you know, they made that big game-changing play, and I think – the Jaguars, and really, I think their issues over the last couple of years has just been really terrible situational football, and that just doesn't seem to go away. And the Dolphins were able to take advantage of that, and I thought they were close on some of their explosives down the field. They hit Hill for an 80-yarder. They hit Waddle for 63. But then there was a couple of other deep shots that they were just a tick off on, and I think that speaks to some of the week one, you know, just rust and trying to find your footing as an offense. So you know, I think the Dolphins certainly got better as that game moved along. They got some big plays on defense and were able to kind of really flip that script there late in the game. And I think the same thing with the Bills. I think the game script started to favor the way Buffalo wanted to play, and they were able to take control.
Tua was like 6 of 10 on passes that went over 10 yards, had the 80-yard touchdown to Hill, missed Hill on what would have probably been another touchdown. It's one difference between Arizona and Miami is Arizona had no success going down the field, in part because the way the Bills defended them. And I wonder how concerned should Bills fans be with no Taron Johnson against the Dolphins? What is Taron Johnson someone that allows the Bills to be as good as they've been against Tyreek Hill, against a fast receiver, always keeping a cap on the defense? How concerning is that loss, not just, of course, long-term, however many games he's going to miss, Joe, but in this matchup itself?
Well, I think the Bills have actually been very good against Tyreek Hill. That doesn't mean that Tyreek Hill's not amazing and a real problem, but the Bills have had a lot of success. And I really think that's rooted more in the safety play and how consistent they've been in terms of staying leveraged over top. And you couple that with being able to generally get quick pressure on Tua and some very timely blitzes on Tua. And you know, the Bills have been able to have some level of success there. And I think Taron Johnson matters a lot, but I think in a game like this where you might miss Taron Johnson the most is going to be matching personnel because Dolphins are going to play two backs. They're going to play two, three tight ends at times. They're going to give you a lot of bigger people. And then, you know, the challenge is they have those big people and then they have those explosive dudes to go with it. And it's a lot to deal with. And so I feel like Taron, of course, is a big loss. Cam Lewis played so good in the second half against Arizona. You hope that shows up against Miami, but it's to me it's the run defense, and it's how the Bills are going to fit the run against a very creative run scheme. And you know, again, Cam Lewis was terrific in that second half. He'll need to do that again for the Bills to, you know, try to contain this Miami offense.
And you started there kind of talking about the safeties, and I think on the surface that looked like it went fine in week one, Joe, but how is that maybe the bigger thing to watch when it comes to the Dolphins and big plays is Rapp played last year, obviously, because he has the pick that closes the season, but you just don't – that this might be the first time where we're really seeing a big test of, hey, no Micah Hyde or Jordan Poyer.
Yeah, well, I think one of the benefits, though, to playing Miami is Tua and his quick trigger, even on the vertical stuff. You know, he's going to get the ball out quick. And I think where if the Bills safeties failed at all in coverage against Arizona, it's because – you know, Kyler Murray can really extend plays. And, you know, you extend plays, your spacing gets funky on the back end. And, you know, there were some times where there was available targets down the field. I mean, Arizona had two drops, Michael Wilson, Marvin Harrison down the field drops. And then you had some other instances where Kyler was able to extend some plays and create space. I think that's a benefit to playing Miami, is Tua's not going to extend those plays. If you make Tua, you know, process deeper into the snap, that's where things generally become worse for him. And so I think the in-structure nature of the explosive plays that Miami wants to get down the field helps the Bills in terms of what they have at safety right now.
Joe Marino of the Locked On Bills podcast. Any other player we should shine a light on? Rousseau, of course, had a big day. Vaughn, are you very encouraged by what you saw out of him? Or anyone else before we wrap up that you want to mention as someone that maybe isn't getting enough credit from week one?
Yeah, I think I was as critical as anyone in the world last year about Von Miller. I called for him to be inactive. I didn't see the use of him playing any snaps. I thought he was terrific against Arizona. It wasn't just the pass rush. It was the run defense. Played smart, played disciplined, looked like he had his feel. You saw him be able to corner and bend and you know, be able to convert speed to power and use length. I mean, it looked like Von Miller in some ways. And I think if that type of impact can be consistent throughout the season, that's going to be huge. And of course, I mean, everybody saw Greg Rousseau. I mean, he was phenomenal in that game. But I'll shout out Dorian Williams as well. And I don't know that Dorian Williams was a high impact player, but what encouraged me about Dorian in this game is it didn't look like he was drinking through a fire hose. And I felt like that's every time I watched him last year, as boy, I just felt like instinctively he was really rough and just, you know, making a lot of full speed mistakes. And I thought in that game, it looked like for the first time to me that things started to slow down for Dorian Williams and he didn't represent a liability on the field. And so I was very encouraged with him in that big moment. And, you know, obviously an important piece of what Buffalo's got to be moving forward until Matt Milano comes back.
Quickly, just to wrap here, Joe, Dalton Kincaid, in your review of the game, did it look like the one catch was because the Cardinals made an intent to take him out of it?
Oh, no question. Yeah, I think we've all been predicting that Dalton Kincaid was going to be the primary guy in this passing offense and, you know, maybe 120 or so targets. Feels like Arizona thought that too. I mean, a lot of attention. I mean, sometimes multiple defenders rolling the safety. When Kincaid broke, multiple guys would crash on him. And I think to the credit of Josh Allen in this offense, they were able to function outside of that and said, okay, cool, you want to do that? We got other guys we're happy to involve in this offense. And Josh completed, 18 passes to 9 different players. And so, yeah, it wasn't a lack of skill or, you know, anything like that from Kincaid. It was just Arizona said, that's not going to be the guy that beats us. And the Bills said, okay, fine, we'll go to other players in the passing game.
Joe Marino, the Locked On Bills podcast. We chat every Wednesday, and this time it's just the day before a game. Joe, enjoy the Dolphins game.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Big one coming up tomorrow night on Thursday Night Football. You can listen to the Locked On Bills podcast wherever you get your podcast, at the Odyssey app, Spotify, all that good stuff. The Locked On Bills podcast. When we return, I've got a really, really good snark cannon to roll out at some point. I mean, I've been thinking about it for a full day.
Okay. There's also weird stuff happening with the Browns and Deshaun Watson.
That's true. Right, and we've now got Kyle Shanahan maybe said too much about Christian McCaffrey, and it might be time to freak out. Might be.
Oh, what? Like what his injury is?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I'm a little. I haven't been four different teams. I'm worried. Well, officially worried.
You should maybe be worried. But should the Niners be worried? Maybe not. Jeremy and Joe, 803-0550 on WGR. Let TRS Heating and Air Conditioning intercept your heating bills. Enter now at WGR550.com for a chance to win $1,200 towards your home heating costs. Don't fumble this opportunity. Contest ends January 5th. TRS Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical Excellence, powering tomorrow, comforting today. Kyle Shanahan on Christian McCaffrey. If it were the playoffs, he would have played. He played through an injury, a calf injury, in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I believe they're similar. I know it was a calf then, and it's a calf now. You guys can ask Christian more on that. Definitely, I believe if it was a playoff game, he would have played. It's not just the calf, it's the Achilles. and the Achilles is tendonitis, and that stuff comes and goes. Right now, aren't you like, stop talking, stop talking?
I'm already like, yeah.
And please. When it's acting up, it's something you've got to be very careful about. Christian's very diligent about that stuff. If it was a playoff game, he made it very clear he believed he could go. But when you hear that type of stuff, and it's not a playoff game, and it's week one, especially when you're dealing with the lower extremities like that, it's a tough decision. But hearing all the words and stuff in the long run, it made it easy. Hearing all the words,
the words and make stuff. Me want to cry. Holy cow.
Jordan Mason, by the way, was very good in rush yards over expected this week, 30 rush yards over expected, and a surprising number. You know, you like next-gen stats when it says good things. You hate it when it says bad things. James Cook, minus 12 rush yards over expected.
Really?
Yeah.
Yikes.
There you go.
The Niners thing very quickly. McCaffrey, what scares me about that is that, okay, he could play, but we're the Niners. We don't need it.
Yeah.
We need him healthy in January and February. So if you're a fantasy owner, the Niners just say, yeah, we're just not going to play him for basically 2 months because we just need to make sure he's healthy for the playoffs.
Yup. Could happen. Good to have Jordan Mason if you got him. Howard picks the Bills. It's that time.
Let's
coming
go.
Up next.
Undefeated. Here it comes.